it was all a pipe dream, watching bodyboarding up on TV. Deep at reef, watching tension repeats, eating bakery feeds at 18, living the dream with no sunscreen. Yeah, we were so keen, surfing Aussie pipe, buying Riptide.
Alright, g'day, welcome to the Riptide Bodyboarding Podcast, the home of bodyboarding. Thank you for joining us on episode 90 of our verbal journaling, and I'm your host, Luke O'Connor. Well, today's guest is a very old friend, someone I've known for well over a decade. He's one of the coolest, calmest, and charismatic cats that I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. He's a musician, an artist, and above all, he's one of the smoothest operators when it comes to riding a piece of foam that we love to call a bodyboard. From his crazy ventures to Mandurah Wedge, all the way around the world, visiting Hawaii, Indo, Mexico, California, sponsored by one of the biggest bodyboarding brands in the world through Hub Boards, and also 662 Mod back in the day. He's a budding musician and artist in his own right, and he's just a really down-to-earth fella with an amazing background and story that I want to really dive into deeper today. I'm speaking to none other than Josh Ellard Garner. Sir, how the bloody hell are you?
Luke, that was a really nice introduction. Thank you very much. I'm slightly blushing. I know. I'm really good, bro. I'm so happy to be speaking with you and the Riptide crew. Like, an absolute honour to be here. So thank you.
Oh, bro, the pleasure is all ours, honestly. And I know I've been trying to tee this up for a while with, like, a lot of people I've talked on the potty. There's so many things that come in between our schedules and different paths don't link up, but now we're finally here. And, man, there's so much to talk about. Like, when you go back through your bodyboarding career highlights, your moments, just your living life in general, it is filled with an array of highs, lows, incredible feats, you know, like just for all the Riptide core lords out there, issue 172, the famous paddle attempt at the right, and you coming up, you know, relatively unscathed but also fucked up in your own right, spluttering and you know,
yeah,
everything coming from your ears and your nose. So you've really pushed the boundaries in progressive bodyboarding, man. And I'd love to start there because it's quite hot on the topic at the moment with a lot of whiteys, tension, outtakes and kind of pre-sequel cuts that you have been going ham at the right, brother. And You were one of the first people, in my understanding, to really give it a go paddling along with Ryan Hardy and such.
Yeah.
Can we just take it back to that Riptide cover and what were your first moments out the right and when did you think it was a paddable way?
That was, 172, hey, nice. I guess you got to know that stuff because you're working for them. But, I do remember. Hey?
I said, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I said I get scolded by the boys both airlines if I don't, so yeah, gotta do my homework, bruh.
Yeah. Oh man. How many issues of Riptide are there? Where are we up to right now before, you know, because obviously there's, you know, we're all craving for another release.
Dude, this was only just mentioned on the closeout podcast as of recently. I just want to double check. Give me one moment. The final cut, issue 204. There's 204 Riptides out there, and hopefully by the end of the year there'll be 205.
Oh man, I can't wait. Bring it on. But yeah, back to the question. I think we all kind of knew straight away you could paddle it. I mean, you know, we are bodyboarders, and that's like the whole experience, I guess. You know, jet skis are there to definitely assist in that process, especially out at these kind of waves, but you know, you're instantly like, oh, I want to be able to paddle it as well, you know, that challenge of that. So that was pretty much on the card straight away. And I mean, I think before that cover shot, I had two sessions out there, and I was a bit of a grommet back then, and I remember not really having like a tow partner or anything like that. I was just there with our good mate Strico, James Strickland, and he was filming everyone, and I just jumped off and had a paddle. I got a couple barrels, little ones. And then for that cover, I went back with Jared Foster and Chris Crossy, a little crew that was kind of like a strike mission, and it was a big swell. It was maybe like 5 meters. We get there in the morning and we check it from the cliff, and it's it's bombing, and then the wind dies off, so we kind of do this like strike mission and have an arvo session. And that day was rogue. That particular wave, I actually got half towed in, half paddled in, and then, you know, I'm kind of free falling, and that shot was captured. And I got a few good waves that day, but it was pretty rogue conditions. I mean, less than perfect. And
dude, it looked insane, yeah. Josh, like how green the water was, how it looked like it had been raining from a storm, and then, you know, it had gone offshore for 24 hours or whatever it needs for that wave to, clean itself up, so to speak. And I know, you know, listening to Whitey and listening to yourself and obviously Louis and George and Davis and so many of the surfers that surf it out there, that there are so many different factors that come into play when the conditions are to be, you know, on and right to surf it. It just seemed that, like, you, it was like a moment in time that was almost like destined to kind of happen. And did you at any stage during that session feel that history was being made?
I guess there's a big energy out there, so you're feeling history is being made in your own, you know, kind of in yourself. You know, you're checking off another little notch in the belt kind of thing, because it is a special place. You know, it's a rare wave. It's not it's not something that happens every day. So you get out there and it's like, wow, this is like special nature putting on this, like, you know, there's something very special about it. And I mean, when you think about how the ocean, these swells travel and then they refract to certain rocks and reefs and create these, it's geometry in a way, creates this special moment in time. And, you know, if you're there, a part of it, you can't help but feel very grateful. And I guess with that wave, it was one of the bigger ones of the day, and it slabbed up. And I mean, if I go back to my vision when it kind of started pitching and I've left the face of the wave and I'm free falling, I mean, I can still see it. So it's obviously left a print in my mind. And then the hold down and being, I got compressed onto the rocks right at the bottom for a while. I was just pushed onto the bottom of the rock, couldn't really get off it. And then all of a sudden I'm off it, but my ears have kind of bursted, or like, you know, maybe slightly perforated. I don't think it was too major, but definitely threw my balance off. And then in some ways I felt kind of, you know, like I didn't have, there was no flotation. I mean, there was, but I didn't think to use it. So I was just, you know, without the inflatable vest at the bottom of the ocean there. And so it was a full-on hold down that kind of pushed me to a place of like, uh-oh, this is, you know, I'm like basically going to surrender and inflate my lungs, or, you know, like I couldn't hold any further. And then next thing, I'm just on the surface and it felt you know, it felt special. Felt like, wow, I just survived that. You know, I think Crossy and some of the surfers from in Walpole that lived around there, and then Jared and, you know, Jamie Scott, who got the photo, they were all, you know, excited that I was, you know, on the surface of the water again, but also they were pretty pumped up about the shot. And sometimes I don't really like to see the shots after the session. I don't really want to see it straight away, but this one got shown to me, and yeah, everyone was kind of pretty hyped on it. It looked pretty cool. I mean, it felt amazing, and it looked amazing, and it was all pretty accurate for what it was, really.
Bro, it was beyond pretty cool. It was groundbreaking at the time, and still is to this day. Like, not many people can say that they've thrown themselves over a 15-foot, you know, mountain of Atlantic water, just unloading on this ugly, you know, grotesque mushroom-like rock in the middle of the shark-infested water, man, down in Southwest WA. Like, that's stuff that people, only a select few, are ever really going to feel. And I just, you know, I want to go back to that point of you saying you were you know, held down and kind of pinned on the bottom there. What was it like being on the bottom of the reef at the right? And what does it feel like? And what, how did you feel like down there?
Oh, I mean, I guess that now that reflecting on it just now, I'm like, it was kind of like that all-time low before the all-time high, you know what I mean? I kind of had to pay that price to get that, you know, notch on the belt. I mean, I'd always been charging waves since the moment, you know, I got into bodyboarding. It was kind of for that reason. So in some ways it was amalgamating to such a moment of a kind of a career high for me. But yeah, when I got pushed to the bottom and my ears burst and, like, you know, I still had my board was still attached, my fins were still on, flippers, like, I was lucky because I could swim to the surface. But when I was at the bottom, that was a weird feeling because it was just, you know, being pinned to the bottom. And also I'd actually heard that it was really deep and not many people had touched the bottom. And then all of a sudden I'm like getting smudged on the bottom. I mean, it was nice and soft. I remember it being soft and in some respects, yeah, kind of pretty gracious to me in that regard. It didn't knock me about. It was kind of like, wow, this is soft. But the pressure of being so deep was evident. And then trying to find the surface, I was swimming up for so long. Well, it felt like a long time, but I started to question whether I was swimming the right way, which was a bit of a nightmare, but not really. You know, I definitely don't have nightmares about this. It wasn't like, wasn't really like a full-on traumatic experience. It was more of just an exhilarating, exciting, and almost like a loving expression. But I, when I got to the surface, eventually it felt like a bit of you know, like I had a little bit of extra support there. I was calling on some extra strength and it got me to the top. And yeah, I think, like, it was basically hitting the rock. It was a rock bottom, basically. Rock bottom moment for me. But then I got something out of it. Like, so it was kind of, you know, I paid my dues for that cover in some respects.
You did, man. But it also highlighted to so many people around the world what was doable on a bodyboard. And, you know, we've looked at Shane Ackerman recently at Chopes paddling that 15, arguably 20-foot wave. It's in the same category as yours. You know, there's a lot of other great bodyboarders out there that have come after you that have continued to push the sport. And not to say people before you weren't either, you know, that there is so many good crew out there, you know, pushing themselves with core heavy slabs. But the right was an anomaly because it was so out of the way, hadn't really been seen that much. And, like, you know, that shot would be 11, 12 years old now. Was it, how old were you in that?
Yeah. I was 19. So it's more than that old. Yeah. Shit.
How old are you now?
35.
Raza, so we're talking. I've undercooked that
19 or 20 or something.
See, that even gives it more relevance, man, because you're a young man. It's not like you've got oodles of experience in heavy water ocean. I know you've been to Hawaii a lot and Indo and California, and you've surfed, and especially Mexico, you've surfed a lot of heavy waves. But that was that wave was kind of long before a lot of that travel had occurred. Was that one of those moments where you were kind of like the biggest wave that I've caught so far in my life?
It's one of those spots where you're just really in the moment. You're not really thinking like, oh, wow, this is the biggest wave I've ridden. You're just kind of like having a go. And obviously it's, thinking back then, it was very unique, and I was actually kind of in some ways super green to the whole thing, just really just going for it at the mercy of the ocean, and far less calculated than I am these days when I surf out there. But even though I'm still pretty reckless in some respects, because you kind of need to be, but back then it was literally like, oh, here's the biggest wave of the day, let's go, last minute having a crack. Way too deep. Still keen enough to paddle and throw myself over it, which happened on that wave. So, I think, like, in some ways that trip kind of came together very spontaneously. I was literally partying like a madman the nights before, so I wasn't... I wasn't coming in on a good sleep or anything. I was coming in on sleepless night, basically. They're the things you do when you're a young man doing that stuff. And, so that was, you know, it's different now where I don't drink or smoke and stuff. And that gives me a level of, a little extra bit of confidence when it comes to this stuff, and I can actually feel I take a bit of responsibility there because I want to keep doing this. So it's like certain health modalities need to come into your life to make it more of an enjoyable and professional and respectful experience, because no one wants to get injured out there, and we're all in it together out there. You know, there's a community of us that are looking out for each other, and the last thing we want is people getting injured out there. So we want it to be a great progressive experience, and we all come in safe, and so far so good. But I definitely pushed a bit of a boundary in my own regard. Back then, I mean, I'd done Chopu. I'd pushed myself a lot, but that was all of a sudden, just to another threshold, which did push my body to a certain threshold as well of what it's capable of, and I have to respect that. You know, I'm not going out to do that again anytime soon. So it's kind of like was a rare one-off moment that I'm very grateful that it happened.
Yeah, well, you definitely push your body to the nth degree when you're coughing up blood and using blood out of your ears. You definitely know that if you've compressed your body against like the whole weight of the Atlantic Ocean, so to speak, on top of you, and you're kind of lucky to come out alive, man. But dude, looking at your most recent sessions out there, like we were speaking about before about going out with Whitey and Shane Ackerman and being able to surf with Nathan Florence on that most recent trip. What's that like these days, and how were those sessions of late?
Yeah, those sessions have been awesome, and like huge shout out to Whitey for getting me involved. He is just a wizard in like kind of manifesting things, and just really fun to travel with. And you know, we talking lots and just listening to good music, and you know, we just go and get it done, and it's just really an effortless kind of thing. It feels really natural doing it with him. And then yeah, Shane Ackerman was there for one of the sessions, and he's a really amazing guy. I was impressed with his composure and respect for the ocean, and just a friendly person. I enjoyed surfing with him. And then also Nathan Florence was there at the last session. He is another amazing person. You know, being around him in the lineup and in and out of the lineup, but just his level of big wave riding is incredible, and his respect for the ocean and just respect for the whole experience was really inspiring as well, because he didn't necessarily get you know, any amazing waves, but he was still so happy. And I like being around people that you know, they're just happy to be there. And you know, if you don't get the wave of your life, it's fine. But yeah, Shane, I'll start with Shane because that was the first session. He, I think he was kind of coming back from a pretty bad wipeout from the last time he surfed it. So he was being quite cautious, even though he was charging. And then Nathan was trying to do his first paddle. And so he was exploring the terrain, and his approach to paddling is just totally different to the bodyboarding approach, because you know, he's kind of searching for a bit of a chip in to backdoor it. And on the bodyboard, you're just searching for the biggest wave that's coming through that no one's towing, and then you're basically taking off underneath it, and you're free falling straight away. So it's a different approach. And Nathan had to be really patient and kind of dodge the guys that were towing past him. And I think he did a good job to get one, and it was really cool to be out there with him. Harley Ward was out there. He was having a good crack. It's one of those places it's a bit of a marathon. You kind of, like the last two sessions, I've literally gone, you know, dawn till dusk with just water. And you just get energized from probably the really good air. You know, the air is probably a bit of a boost, and then the adrenaline, obviously. But yeah, it's hard to stop, and you kind of got to be real patient. You know, it might take you at least an hour to get that right wave that you want to paddle into. And actually, it was interesting because Harley actually got kind of seasick because there's so much water moving. He literally got nauseous from sitting out there, and had to vomit and stuff like that, and had to call the session early.
That's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. I never thought that could happen, but really, it does happen. Like, you come in, you got sea legs just from bobbing about out there.
Dude, it just shows what's going on out there, and it's just unfiltered, relentless ocean energy that's been developing for thousands of kilometers away and just marching towards the coastline. Like, you know, people, old sailors and you know, a lot of the captains from the first fleet that would come down when they were first colonizing Australia, white Australia, that is, would talk about the roaring 40s that would whip underneath South Africa and make their way over WA, and they would, all of them would name the name that area as the most treacherous part of the ocean to sail through because the ferocity of the storms that would make their way through there and then push all, you know, that swell and that and that wind around the kind of southern hemisphere was just unmatched and unbridled. So to then have those waves show up on your doorstep in one of the most isolated parts of the coast, it's just fascinating. From like I've been lucky enough to visit on the coastline there and see the exact way we're talking about, the right. Never surfed it myself, but just to be there and to feel the energy in which you were just speaking about and the kind of frequency of the place and what it can produce, you do get a sense of almost just wildness and twisted in with like a bit of danger, man. It's just, you know, beautiful natural place, but so many dangerous elements down there that could just take you out. So, and even you just speaking that about Harley getting seasick, just sitting in the lineup, let alone waves and avoid, you know, being held under for, you know, seconds, if not minutes at a time. It's just, man, it sends shivers up the spine, bro.
good shivers and scary shivers. Shiver me timbers, hey.
Yeah, for sure, man. Shiver me timbers all the way back to the first day. You guys know what they were talking about, bro. But, dude, you paddled and surfed so many big waves, Josh. Like, you know, the right's one aspect, but we could go over to Hawaii and speak about countless seasons there and the time with Andre Botha and Anthony Savalchi, you know.
Savalchi.
I always used to name this stuff. But, those were classic times. And I remember sharing one season there with you and you guys were having a real good red-hot crack at some solid wave and some solid partying back in your younger years. What are your recollections of Hawaii, man? And what did you worry about the most?
Hawaii, if I go back to when I first went to Hawaii, I was just in like year 12 and I went with my mum actually. She wanted to come. And that was an amazing trip. It's actually pissing down rain. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can, but I actually was going to ask you, how's it going to do the storm in
NW? Yeah, there's a big storm here today.
Powerful, just about the
rolling 40. I thought I'd do the interview at my old favourite beach, City Beach. Now it's pissing down. So sorry if the rain sound bothers anybody, but I'll continue the story.
Mate, it's all part of the journey.
Yeah, it'll probably stop raining. So first season Hawaii was, I was pretty young and my mum came actually, and we straight off the plane, we get to a pipeline and, you know, it's just classic pipeline and I'm going out there. We get to where we're staying at Rocky Point. I dump my stuff, grab my board, and my mum is just shitting herself because when you're on the beach at pipeline, it's just this classic, massive, perfect wave, and I surf until dark and get back after dark, and she's just, you know, she was just like, why did I come to Hawaii with you? This was the worst holiday of my life. Which I at the time I couldn't make any sense of that. I'm just so keen to do my thing, but now I think back and I'm like, oh wow, that would have actually been quite a stressful experience as a mother. So sorry, Mum, I love you. My mum has always been a great supporter, but when it comes to she doesn't really like checking out the antics, you know, seeing all the images and stuff. It kind of looks a bit too dramatic for her. So then the second trip I went, which was when I started riding with the 662 mob, and they had a big presence in Hawaii, and I get off the plane and I go to meet with Botha and Savoji and Eddie Solomon at their condo in Turtle Bay, and they were laying on the couch Andre was, you know, they were probably buzz on, as they say. They were definitely loose, or either coming down or something or other. But we were watching this movie called Death Proof. I think it's a Tarantino film, and it's kind of a symbolic moment. Hey, because I feel like when we all connected, we kind of felt like we were a bit death proof and just, you know, kind of rock and roll, just going about it, just going all in. Everything was all in all the time. And that really suited me because I was already kind of doing that. And then I kind of met these two guys that had so much character. You know, Savoji had this crazy Californian Newport Beach lizard. He called himself the lizard, and kind of his character was out there. And then Andre back then was just like this full-blown rock star, and also a real special kind of spiritual poet figure. So these two characters in my life were amazing, actually, at that point in time. They really kind of grounded me, but also shook me up and challenged me. And then we had Eddie Solomon, who was just like the most incredible businessman and manager. And he kind of, kept us motivated. Obviously, I was so young and kind of just like, wow, I'm hanging out with one of my idols now. And it kind of, you got a lot of respect for people when you're hanging out with your idols. You know, you can't help but be like respectful. But it also kind of felt like I just met my family in a way. And Eddie took me under his wing and really supported me after that, because he kind of, you know, I kind of showed my skills with a few things, and we worked together to basically, he helped me establish a career, and I was helping him with these companies that I loved, which are still going today, which is absolutely awesome. And rest in peace, Eddie. You're an amazing, amazing person. I'm forever grateful for your support.
Everyone that speaks about Eddie Josh speaks so highly about him and his infectious personality, his energy, what he did for the sport, and as you just said then before, like his business dealings and ethics were obviously shining through at a time where bodyboarding was, you know, quite prevalent and healthy, and had kind of the world at its feet, so to speak. And I can only imagine what it was like hanging out in that house with, you know, Anthony and Dre being the rock stars that they are. you guys would have had some moments. Could I ask, you know, for the PG to M account of what one of those craziest moments would have been on one of those Hawaii trips?
Oh, I mean, with those two or just in particular?
Probably with those two, because I remember seeing you. You know, I've had so much respect for you too. You've been one of my good friends and idols for a while, with like bodyboarding at the forefront there, man, and you know, trying to emulate your style and just, you know, see how you ride a wave and cut your lines. It's really inspirational. But then seeing you with those two, and you guys almost as like a little wolf pack, I knew something special was going on. And I remember seeing you in Hawaii one of those seasons going like, I can only imagine what these three are getting up to. So shed a little bit of light, if you can, on one of those moments.
All right. Well, shit. There's so many. I haven't actually thought about this, you know, really ever. So it's pretty fresh. But I definitely felt like Andre was like a kind of like a soulmate or something. Savoji was just, you know, like he was on another level. Andre was kind of toning back and becoming more chilled out. Like his days of, he's got some wild stories of his own that he can share, and that he shared with me, and they're just absolutely crazy. And, you know, I mean, you know, Eddie Solomon would give us his card, you know, so we'd have like a 662 credit card and everything was to be spent on that, which was awesome because, you know, I got to travel free. And but I would be really respectful with that and kind of like a pretty frugal in a way. But some of Andre's stories were very decadent, you know. And Eddie would just deal with it. He would, you know, he'd have to cut him off every now and again and leave Andre in this wild, you know, leave Andre kind of like basically homeless. But, you know, Andre's got his own story there and his own journey with what he was doing with his expression. And I think a lot of it was kind of him living out this one of a kind, you know, life. Like, he's a bit of a superstar in a way. In the bodyboarding world, he's certainly a superstar, being the world champion so young, and then, you know, being a part of bodyboarding when it's big, and then all of a sudden being a part of bodyboarding when it's not big. So he, you know, he was deserving of this kind of like rock star life, and it's kind of a natural thing. It felt very organic watching Andre being this rock star. And then Savoji was pretty intense. Like, he used to do weird stuff, that he'd get drunk and want to, like, he'd be like, "Hey, bro, let me cut my arm and put the blood on your like, if I was doing a lot of drawing and stuff, and he'd want to put his blood on my drawings, and, you know, it started to get a bit like
satanic.
Oh yeah, well, that was the thing. I think he actually had that kind of aspect to himself where he actually was like, yeah, like, I can't really relate, because I'm like, I feel like, yeah, I couldn't relate, but at the same time, I was like, okay, if you're going to be like that, you can be like that. I'm not going to, not even really going to judge it. But if I think back, yeah, he was, you know, he actually ended up in a pretty bad place, which I won't go into, but in some respects, I was glad that life sent me in a different direction to him.
Seemed like you guys were yin and yang, man. Like, he was almost the dark side, you were the light side. Andre was somewhere in between. Because my brief encounters with Savoji, man, was like, you know when you look into someone's eyes and they always say the eyes are the gateway to the soul? And you would look into his eyes, man, and you could see destruction. You could see, peril. You could see kind of hatred at times. Not to say that, you know, he couldn't be a nice guy in his own right and do some cool things whenever, but when someone's impaired or on the source, you kind of do see their true traits come out. And no disrespect to Savoji, like, I had a fun time hanging out with him, but I was always very wary and very on edge, so to speak, around him, because you didn't know what was going to happen next. And you could fly off the handle kind of at any time. And that was only the small interactions over a season that I had with him. I couldn't imagine the interactions you had with him staying with him for those periods of time.
Oh, I mean, I basically was staying with the 6-6, you know, I was staying with him and Andre because that was what Eddie, you know, arranged with my accommodation, basically. So we're all staying together. So I basically just had to practice patience and understanding, and just, so that was probably the biggest lesson, you know, because they were, well, Savoji was pretty hard work, just constantly searching for the next buzz and not really keen to surf that much. And I wanted to surf all day, every day. And I was keen to work. And obviously, Hawaii, you can surf every day. But Savoji was kind of like, oh, I just want to surf the big days and get the big shots because that's all I need to do to get the job done. But in the end, you know, that wasn't enough, and he basically got cut from the team. But yeah, definitely he had some things that he was dealing with, and he felt a bit I think he might have felt some kind of shame about something, and he was avoiding dealing with it through drugs and alcohol. He was actually quite good to me in terms of like where I could say no, I don't do that. He would respect that and not hassle me to get involved in his antics. And also he was almost kind of like slightly protective, because he was like, oh, Josh is the young gun basically in the team. He needs to be bodyboarding, he needs to be healthy. So he was actually kind of took me under his wing in a way, and like, as you said, he's quite of an intense character, so having him on your side and is only empowering until it's not, basically. But having Andre, getting to know Andre was really cool, and just seeing him in those days and then seeing his progression, and just like, oh, he's an amazing person. And then I got to live with his family in South Africa, and I made a really good connection with his parents, and made a really good connection with his wife, Trish. And, you know, now I just need to meet their child. And, they're lifelong friends. And Savoji, I actually don't know what he's up to. I think he was in and out of jail for quite some moments there. And, he's definitely not bodyboarding still.
Yeah, I guess we all take our different paths and we all go different ways. It's a shame. I guess a shame for us watching, but for the individual who's chosen a different path, it could be the exact thing they need to do. But, you know, talking about the sessions you had over there in Hawaii, and especially with Andre, like, he's renowned for being a pipeline specialist, man. Like, him and Tamiga, Mike Stewart, obviously, Skip and Harb, they kind of sit up there in the top echelon when it comes to properly reading that wave and just putting themselves in harm's way of, you know, the crazy powerful lines of the Pacific Ocean, and making it work time and time again. Can you recount any sessions that you had at Pipe with him, especially that you were kind of blown away by Andre's skill out there?
Yeah, definitely. Andre's commitment and love for Pipeline is, you know, second to none. He's definitely one of the best out there on the bodyboard, and he's very well respected. And, you know, he would do a lot of dawn patrol sessions, really early ones, and on those big days, and I'd kind of tag along and learn a lot from him. He would kind of sit in some hairy spots really deep on the inside, and watching, you know, when you're just getting to know Pipeline and you're watching some of these riders sitting on the inside, and it just looks so risky there. But as you start to learn from them, you realize that that's actually their experience is shining through. They know the wave so well, they can read the chessboard basically, you know, five steps ahead. And so they're sitting in the hairy spot, but really they're in control to a certain respect, and they're waiting for that little second reef nugget that has their name all over it. And everyone's too busy dodging wash throughs and stuff. That was a lot of highlights, just watching Andre out there. And just, he's a very strong man, so you can't help but be in awe of his kind of command of his body, you know, when he's in the water, he's in control. He's got a stature about him, and that confidence is contagious. And it was just awesome to be around when I was younger. Took on a lot of his style, actually, because his style is his own style, and it's functional to how he rides the wave. And that rubbed off onto me to focus on the style that you know, everyone's got their own body, and that, you know, it's a bodyboard, so you're going to have your own style, and there is things you can emulate that make your style better because you're practicing the appropriate way to do it. But then there's also a lot of leeway to express and go with the flow based on how your body wants to do the trick or ride the wave. You know, you might not even want to do tricks. You might, you know, there's even room to invent tricks. That's what's so cool about this sport. There's still a bit of space to do your own thing, totally.
For sure. You want to be progressive and take on other people's good quality, but you want to be original at the same time. And I think that's evident in your surfing for sure. You know, there's certain, even watching that wedge clip that was on We Bodyboard that posted maybe a little bit ago now, with all your waves out there, man. And obviously, yeah, you know, you surf that wave extremely well. Like, you're up there with the Louis and the George Humphreys and all the crew who absolutely nail it out there, Jake Stone and stuff when he was, you know, properly bodyboarding. But you can see that you approach the wave very differently when it comes to, you know, even here the filmer, for example. My point being, the filmer going, oh, backy, and you go for a nice, like, you know, beautiful air forward. And you can see that someone, say, in the filmer's eyes, is expecting a certain move because that's the done thing out there, but you're approaching it with, you know, a different mind frame, and you might do a big, beautiful, loopy roll instead of an invert or a closeout backflip or something that, you know, might have been seen by another bodyboarder. But the one thing I noticed out there too is you do see people get barrels out there, but in that clip you get, you know, four or five notable, very long, deep barrels at the wedge. And that's, again, another wave you ride in the wave that is original to your own style and is a credit to your ability to read the wave differently and to maximise its potential to your personality and style. Like, I really feel like that's what you're getting at, and it's evident in a lot of your riding. It's so cool to see that that's a brand and a signature that you're wanting to put your name to and you're happy to express to. It's all well and good to be a carbon copy of Nick Gornell and cross your leg as tight as possible and be so close to the board, but and never let your board leave the board, but, you know, there's really something to be said about style and charisma and making it your own, and I think that's pretty evident in your bodyboarding, Josh.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, and I mean, like, with Nick Gornall, his style is incredible, and if you see him, he's a really fit man, and his surfing is fit as, you know, it's super tight. And yeah, the sun moves the way he does it, that is just incredible. As you say, yeah, the body and the board are very intertwined.
Definitely. He's a freak, man. He's a freak. But, like, to that wedge video, you know, like, you get some incredible moves in there, man, like a couple of big inverts, beautiful barrels, air reverses, forwards. Like, what's your relationship with that wave? And have you ever had or have you ever sustained a serious injury out there? Because the landings to me just look fucked up.
At Mandra Wedge?
Yeah.
Yeah, shit, have I? I don't think I have, to be honest. It's a dramatic wave, and somehow you kind of. Oh, actually, nah. I think I broke a rib doing one of those rolls. It's like there's one of these rolls I do, and I kind of just disappear into it. But you can't see. But I'm actually free falling, and I try to land it, and it just flogged me, and then I'm just so winded in the inside, and I'm like, oh shit, I'll keep trying to surf. I think I tried to get a few more waves and the pain settled in, and then yeah, I ended up breaking a rib. So yeah, I have injured myself. That was probably the worst injury. I mean, you feel pretty, you know, like when you're absolutely wiped out and wrecked after a big day, and it feels good. It's one of those places.
Exactly what you mean. It's almost worth the pain and the suffering, because you've just done so many aerial moves that you wouldn't be able to do on any other wave, really, around the world. Obviously a few, like Iluka comes to mind and Nugan comes to mind. I'm sure there's some waves in the far corners of the world that can emulate it. But to be a man-made wave with a break wall, and to have certain seasons out there when the sand builds up, and to break, you know, in such shallow water with so much sideband energy, it's fascinating to watch, man. It's one of the seven wonders of the modern world, in my opinion, when it comes to man-made waves. It's insane.
Yeah, it is. It's got a bit of a history as well. It used to kind of wedge like right down the beach, and I think they keep developing the rocks, and it's now in its own little arena. But yeah, just dropped my phone. You still got me?
Yeah, bro, I got you.
Just checking in. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm clear,
baby. I think, like, yeah, it's because it's a special place again, and you kind of get in the you get in the zone, and you kind of break in that, like, all right, we're hitting ramps today, and you hit them all day, and it's just the best thing ever. You want to make the most of it, and then at the end of the day, you're just like, wow, I feel like I got hit by a truck, but like it was the bliss truck or something, you know. You're just like, yes, it was sick. I mean, and you know, some of those big ramps, they come at a price, like Louis 720s and stuff. When, you know, he's been injuring himself on a lot of those airs that he's been doing, and you know, he's complains about how his neck, and so that's coming at a price. I mean, they look pretty gnarly. You see a bit of it, but yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of find like I haven't really. I don't know. I've kind of figured out a way to launch and like kind of land in these like nice little soft spots. And I think some of that comes from, you know, maybe just deciding to do a cruisy roll instead of the backflip and forcing, you know, instead of trying to force a move, I just will sometimes just say, nah, I'm not going to even, you know, it's not going to happen on this one. And, but yeah, I don't know. Sometimes like my style out there when I'm riding is I have like a few things I want to check off, you know. Some of the waves I want to get, there's no ramp. I don't need a ramp. It's like, you know, you want to get a barrel, or you want to do a carve, or you want to do a forward pop, or a rev hack rev kind of thing. And you got to keep moving and see what it brings, because it's pretty unique. There's a lot of diversity out there in terms of, you know, the waves you can ride. And then there's also these hook bowls where it's basically you're kind of, everything is converging to this one moment of eruption. And it really suits the air reverse, basically, because you're kind of coming at it you're coming out at full speed, coming down the face of the wave. You don't even bottom turn up. You're kind of going down at it, but then this energy is coming up at you, and you basically just bounce off that like you'd be doing a rev pop, but next thing you're fully in the air. And they're just the dream. Like, I dream about that stuff. I have these, sometimes I have a vision of that ramp, and I wake up out of my bed basically, and I'm like, oh, you know, it's like, there's just so much, there's like a magic thing in that. And I guess that is man-made as well as nature coming together. And yeah,
so many wave shapes out there, Josh. It's unbelievable to see.
Yeah, just it's special.
Barrels and like the different A-frame TPs and then yeah, the book bowls you describe and where they're perfect for the reverse and incredible. But man, moving from one wedge to another and then going back to 662 Mob and obviously your time with them, I know California and the West Coast of America holds a special place in your heart. You've spent a fair bit of time over there. What is it like in comparison, circa Mandura Wedge to then Cali Wedge? Because they're both very famous wedges, but so very different in their own right.
Yeah, they are very different. I literally got back from America 3 days ago, by the way.
Oh, nice.
I didn't surf. I was in the mountains. I was in North Carolina.
Wow. Music?
Yeah, a bit of music, bit of personal, like, projects and some friends. Special trip. But, yeah, just dosing up on mountain energy, no waves.
Love it.
I had my eyes on it, but it didn't come together. So I'm back in Perth now. But, yeah, Cali Wedge, that is a totally different wedge. You know, it's not really a hook bowl. It breaks, it holds way bigger, like the face of the wave kind of pitches taller. It's definitely heavy. It's definitely got a heaviness like Mandra Wedge. And I mean, you can go right and left out there, which you can go left out wedge, but not really, you're not really, you know what I mean? You can, but it's not, it's blatantly a right-handed wave. I guess like, what's the main difference? It's, I mean, Mandra Wedge has this kind of blatant sidewash that you can catch and then you line up and, California Wedge also has that, but you kind of, from memory, you're, and like any wedge, you're kind of trying to G up with the pyramid of the wave and generate the speed from that kind of you know, I guess it is converging energies coming up and you're on that pinnacle of it and you just you wanna release from there. And hopefully there's an oncoming section you can time it with. Cali kind of always has a section you can... It's just a matter of timing. So the timing is a bit more difficult. But I don't know. I seem to have a good go out there. And I really do like lefts. I mean, it's interesting because we mainly have rights in WA. But I grew up surfing a lot of lefts. I learned everything on my left first, and then I was like, oh wow, I gotta learn it on my right. So
and what were the local waves that were lefts?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the wave now. City Beach Groin is it's like a left-handed off the rocks, and I kind of favored that. And also I'm a goofy skateboarder, which has nothing really to do with bodyboarding, but at the same time I favored my left. I'm a left-handed person, like I write with my left hand, so everything going left was a bit stronger for me, so it just, I kind of learnt everything that way. And once you once you get the ARS down when you're young on one way, that feels pretty good. And I got that, you know, down when I was pretty young, and then you realise, oh, you got to do it the other way. Which kind of start? It kind of feels a bit spastic when you start to do it the other way. But then eventually you find that balance, which is one of the magic things about bodyboarding, is that kind of balance. You know, there's no goofy or regular. There's just left and right, and basically one is the same form. You know, it's the same. It's just one way or the other. It's not like you have to be. Well, you know, there's a symmetry to it as well as an asymmetry, but the foundation of it encourages encourages a wholesome approach, and I really like that. I think if I go to my skating days, I actually was fascinated to learn everything switch. So I'd try to do it regular, I'd try to do it goofy. And then with bodyboarding, you know, you go right, you go left, and it's the same thing. It's not like surfing where you basically have your feet the same way, backhand or forehand. So yeah, it's a special craft, and I mean that's what you're gonna give homage to, riding on the belly for that. It's cool.
For sure, man. It's as I think I've heard in a video, you say in a previous interview or video section that it's pure natural euphoria, and I totally agree. It really is.
Yeah.
Super special, man. You know, being so close to the energy source and laying down and being able to take in, you know, the whole part of the barrel, seeing it from top to bottom and getting deeper than a lot of surfers can, and obviously hitting airs a lot more than, you know, general regular surfers can. So it's, it's fascinating. But, dude, thinking about cutting edge, I remember a photo coming out of you punting a mammoth invert out there, bro. Can you run us through that? Back in the day, what it was like
with
that
10-foot
section.
I remember that one, yeah. I think, yeah, I was kind of like taking my vision back to that particular wave when I was trying to describe it. And, yeah, I mean, it was just a nice wedge. And I kind of, it wasn't even a perfect section, but I definitely bounced nicely into the flats and had a nice form to the invert, and that helped. I mean, there's potential to get the biggest ramps ever out there. And I'm, you know, seeing like Tanner and Craig and all the Cali crew are really stepping it up, especially lately. You can see it's only a matter of time before everyone's boosting massive on a bodyboard. So, I mean, sometimes you're watching and it's like, oh, that could have been the one. I love watching some of that raw footage of Cali Wedge where you're just seeing everyone having the best time. But yeah, there's amidst all of that, there's some serious ramps that are it looks kind of hard to time it, you know. Everyone's pretty keen to get on it, but if you could find the one, there's definitely some 15-foot inverts going potential.
What's it like surfing over there with the black ball rules and how you can only surf at certain times during the day due to the body surfing fraternity and their kind of, you know, regulation of the place?
Yeah, I guess they kind of were the first on it or something, or the, you know, the lifeguards have some power, so they... And, you know, it's kind of fair enough. There is enough of a scene of body surfers there. And if they get it when the sea breeze kind of comes in, they're not really getting it on the peak, but they're still getting a good run of waves. And obviously it's, you know, if everyone's on their surfboards and soft tops and bodyboards and then you're out there trying to body surf, you know, that's kind of, it is a little bit unfair. So they've just invented some rule. It's like black ball. Yeah, it's come like 11 a.m. from memory. Comes in and you literally just have to go in, otherwise you might cop a fine. I actually pushed it every time. I pushed it all the way till the body surfers were out there. And eventually they would say, yeah, time to go in. And everyone had already gone in. I was kind of just pleading ignorance. I'm from Australia. I don't know this rule. yeah, just to scrap a few more waves. You know, I was hungry to get clips. And, you know, I'm all the way in Cali Wedge and it's breaking, which is already rare. So I scrapped a little bit further into black ball. Black ball? Oh, black ball.
Oh man, I might be getting it wrong. I thought it was black ball, but it could be black wall too.
Nah, I think it's ball.
Yeah, sweet. It sounds like a full pool game, mate, like a pool shark move.
Yeah, it does. Definitely like, whoa, black ball.
Watch out, man. You're already fucking done.
Yeah. But I'd go back out and have a body surf and, so that's the black ball rule. I guess they still might have that rule in play.
And, dude, that's where 662 mob kind of originated. Like, I know a lot of the stuff was in Hawaii, but that's where Eddie Solomon originally is from, and that's where his partner Tamara, or ex-partner, widow, so to speak, Tamara, lives now with her son. Having contact with them, man, and is the family still, you know, thriving and loving bodyboarding?
Yeah, I have contact with Tamara all the time. I actually do the graphic design for Empire and stuff like that. So they, you know, I'm always helping out with that. Yeah, so I love keeping up with Empire and helping with their design work and, you know, super core Cali wedge vibe. I'm actually doing a California wedge design. So I need to give homage. I need to do this kind of classic stylized illustration of Cali wedge to make for a t-shirt design. So it's kind of nice that we're talking about it because, yeah, obviously there's the big, you know, there it is, but I'm trying to think of something that's going to make it a bit more like kind of homage to the bodyboarding scene of Cali wedge and not just the surfing, but that. So I guess with Eddie Solomon was, you know, one of those, he's a legend of the wedge, and Eddie Jr., his son, is like becoming a legend of the wedge as well now. Which
see the family tree still upholding the kind of values that the late and great Eddie Solomon put in place, you know, hold down the wedge, glue to your die, froth the sport. Like it seems to be, you know, from afar on Instagram, again, I don't have any personal contact, but from afar as a spectator, it just seems like, it really means a lot to him, that place.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's a special spot for everyone over there, especially in the bodyboard scene. Kind of puts bodyboarding on the map in a way. And it's amazing because I remember I was living with Eddie and Tamara and Eddie Jr., who was 1 year old at the time. And then I started to travel about and then the sad news of Eddie becoming unwell changed everything, and we kind of had to work on like some fundraising for his stem cell treatments and just, but he still was always working all the way to the end, just so passionate for bodyboarding and so so motivated. I think what he's done for bodyboarding and for his family is incredible. And Tamara's really amazing. She works so hard to keep it alive. And I know Andre Botha and Trish, they are also working to keep it alive. And it's right in the family of the, you know, the OGs. And then to see that his son just loves bodyboarding, you know, he's found it himself. It's not like, oh, he has to bodyboard because his dad did. He found the love. And you can just see it. You know, I follow him on Instagram and you can just feel that. Oh, it's like palpable. It's like, I remember that froth. That froth will take you somewhere.
How good is that froth, man? When you're young, the world just seems so magical. I mean, you know, as an old man now, like I try to nostalgically kind of relive those moments from time to time, and it's very difficult. Like when you're a young girl coming up and everything's so new and fresh, it just it just feels like the world's your oyster. And it's all, you know, different seasons in your life and you know, there's some good and bad with everything you go through. But yeah, coming up through, you know, the world of water sports and especially on a bodyboard, just something so special about the experiences that you're going to go through. And like, I look at my son sometimes and I can just see the twinkle in his eye and I'm like, oh my goodness, he has got so much to experience coming up, and with such an unaltered and like, you know, fresh set of eyes that we'll just appreciate it for what it is. It's, yeah, it's so cool. It's great to see that the Solomon family has, you know, got an heir to the throne, so to speak, and who knows what's to come out of the west coast of America with him coming up at Cali.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a hot spot of talent and, you know, the right kind of support and motivation. So, you know, that does go a long way. I think about when I was a grommet, there was lots of motivation and lots of purpose to progress as a bodyboarder. It was kind of a cool thing to do, as well as you're with your mates having a great time. So it was just something we wanted to do most of the days, which helped, you know, because you're with your mates having the best time ever, but you're also pushing each other, you know, competitive. And in California, you can kind of see that. You can kind of sense that there might be that vibe about it, and some young guys coming up through, which one of them is Eddie Solomon Jr. It's going to be, and it looks like he's surfing well, so I can't wait to have a surf with him one day.
Oh man, that'll be ridiculous. It'll be like looking back in time, and you know, from the photos, he looks a lot like his old man, so it might be the spitting image of him just coming up and reinvigorating the legacy of his Eddie Solomon, man. But moving from one bodyboarding company to the next, we've got to touch on Hub Board, man, and what they've been doing in the marketplace, and obviously, you know, the epic sleds they're providing you. Well, what's it like working with Jeff and Dave, and what's it done for your bodyboarding career?
Oh, it's been amazing working with both of those people. They're like, you know, it's like, it's interesting because it's like you've got this BZ poster in my room of Hub doing a sick invert, and you know, then all of a sudden he's your mate and you're talking all the time, and it's cool. Like, you know, that alone has done a lot for my career, just to have connection with people that I idolized and, you know, had posters of in my room are now people that I work with. And I guess, you know, obviously I've actually had to trust some of his opinions, because when they were offering me my signature model, I was just like, I'll just go, I'll keep it simple, you know, I'll keep it with the stringer mesh poly pro, that kind of classic combination that I've always enjoyed. But then he, you know, when I'm ordering my customs, he's like, oh, I've got you one of these I chucked in the Sci-5, you need to try it because it's special. And it's true. It's a really special technology for the bodyboard. And there's all these new technologies coming out that they actually do stuff. But I mean, some of it might be a bit of trial and error, but that's what we're doing. So
what is the Sci-Fi, Josh? You know, I know there's so many different blends of composites and bodyboards these days, but and they're all named different things, but like, what is the composite, and what do you find so great about that composite?
Well, I've been riding just my standard stringer with mesh and channels combination, which is still what I prefer to ride. But the Sci-5, I did notice it's like a 5, I think. I mean, I should know this, but, and I could be totally wrong here, which would be pretty embarrassing, but I'll stick my neck out. And I think it's 5 channels. So there's like, instead of, and then maybe a different stringer system. But what it felt like was just a bit more speed, a bit more response off the tail. And, you know, actually kind of good for spinners and stuff like that. A bit more, just a little bit more trajectory and skip, bit of skip in the tail, like, yeah, that's different to just having two stringers. And yeah, I'm not sure what was going on necessarily with the stringer system, because there are there's variety, in all of that. So you'll have to do your own research. And I mean, in some ways you can research, you can look at the board and you can kind of make your own assumption up of whether it's going to suit your style or not.
Dude, let me validate your comments. You're so correct. I've just, as you were speaking, then I was like, let's back up Josh here. I've just gone onto the bodyboard website, and this is the description for the sci-fi board. I'll call you guys for about a minute. Cool. Go faster, fly higher with the Hub Edition quad core and sci-fi channel system. The ultimate in high-performance board design, it has been specially engineered core with two layers of fresh suspension fused with Polypro, dramatically increasing the board's speed, projection, and durability. The quad core is the most advanced core available on the market and exclusively only to Hub boards. Now with the famous Sci-5 concave bottom to greatly increase the board's overall speed, control, and responsiveness, this happens as water is rapidly pushed through the five tight hydrodynamic channels, creating cavitation, which gives lift to the tail, thus minimizing friction, which reduces drag, which equals increasing speed. When riding on your rail, the Sci-5 channels engage to give you heavy-duty traction without any sacrifice maneuverability. The gradual 18-inch channels are narrow, and they also stop well short of the center of the ball. This is designed specifically in order to allow you the freedom to spin, launch, and carve in and around the pocket with ease. So, bro, you were bang on. There was the five channels. Yeah. There was the tail with the spin and the pop, you know, and you're still getting that nice flowy feel throughout the board, but with that extra kind of lift towards the tail and extra speed that, you know, all bodyboarders want and yearn. So, bro, so that sounds like a hell of a board. It can only really filter back to what we're seeing out of your corner of the bodyboarding world when it comes to, you know, those pop forwards and reverses and the amount of lift and speed you can get on those ramps. So hats off to Hub Bodyboard.
Yeah, definitely. So so appreciative of their support. And you know, one thing that I've been actually riding all the boards, like some of Dub's boards, which have been a bit more versatile in shape. Actually, some of those days at the right, I'm riding a Hub Special, which is kind of like a versatile shape, like almost like you could do drop knee, but super stiff, which you wouldn't be expecting, but still managed well out at the right. And actually some of my biggest ramps. Yeah, it was one of those boards. It's now got like five creases on it because that session at the right was a lot. But yeah, that board's gonna be one of those boards I'll look at and have good memories. I don't actually keep all my old boards because they just take up a lot of space, and then you move house and they just forget about them. But I've been lucky enough that there's people that collect the boards, so I've given away to bodyboard collectors, or I've given them away to people to keep riding, which is also a really amazing thing, because a bodyboard lasts for a lot longer than you might think. And if you can't afford to buy a brand new one, you know, these old creased boards still have heaps of life left in them, so it's good to pass them on. But at the same time, some of these boards are, there's like, you know, maybe like five out there in the world that I would, if I saw them again, they would take me back to these handful of special sessions. It's like the memory gets stored in the plastic.
Yeah, most certainly, man. Actually, speaking on that point about you know, handing out boards once you're done with them, a lot of my hand-picked customs I've offloaded to a couple of Groms, or I think it's four now in the Shire, just because you're so right. It's going to sit there. They're going to collect dust. They clog up your garage. You're really probably not going to ride them again because you've had your fun and your time on that board. And it's not past, they're not past their use by date, but you know, you're moving on to another design or another little tweak in your boards themselves. So it's great then to pass them down to the younger and the older generation to then spread the fun and to spread the good vibes. And yeah, you're right, man, a board holds memories of sessions. And you know, I've even got an old four-play Ryan Hardy down there with the Billabong stamp on it, man. The one he won the 2006 challenge on. And for us, it's just, you feel it. Tyson Ryan came over the other day for a podcast. It's actually going to be released.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, really soon. Had a good yarn with Ness. He's such a cool dude. But
he's a legend.
He picked up the board, man, and he was just like, whoa, like, what is this? And I've told him the backstory of it and how I won it in an endless bodyboarding comp here, and John Pine was nice enough to get that as one of the first prizes for the divisions. And, you know, Sean Pine's dad, just an absolute legend of the sport when it came to giving Broms a chance, especially with his shop that he had in Oak Road and Kirrawee there. But,
amazing. I didn't know that about Pino's dad.
Yeah, man, it was actually classic because – at the time, there was a bloke who owned Emerald named Harry. I can't remember Harry's last name, but Harry, you either loved him or you hated him. And I think John and Sean had a bad experience from the get-go with Harry. And again, that's not me passing judgment on Harry. I didn't have any bad experiences with him. It's just what, you know, transpired from there. And that kind of made them make their own club. And
Cool.
Pino being such an incredible bodyboarder in his own right. His dad,
wow, John, really good bodyboarder, yeah.
Oh, fuck, he's a good bodyboarder, man. He knows it, but fuck, he's a good bodyboarder.
Yeah. I love his confidence for sure.
Oh, me too, man. Yeah, that's not a stab at him. Like, he's just one of those dudes that literally...
He's doing well. I caught up with him the other... You went over for the Island comp, and he's doing well for himself, man. I was so happy to hear.
Yeah, he is, man. He's a well-rounded individual, and when he gets back on the phone from time to time, you just realise how good he is. But,
his dad
made that club, and then we were just cruising for those, you know, 5 or 6 years there where it was really pumping. He would take us down to exotic places on the south coast, like down a couple of beaches, you know, far south past Collendale, where they weren't paying on the measure, but like, you know, introduced some crazy waves, made some really cool comps happen. I remember James Cates came to a fair few of them. There was a lot of like underground crew from the south coast that came, and so that's the story about the board. That was one of the presents for that division, and just the link up that he created and the thought he instilled in me from, you know, by winning a division and getting that board. It was just like, what is going on here? I've got Ryan Hardy's board. I will never let this go. And then Finesse to pick it up the other day. And as you just stated before, you can feel the energy in those boards. You're like, look at these elbow creases. Look at the colour designs. Oh, what materials were they using? Look at the old wax and the nose bulbs. Like, look at the Billabong stamp. An actual stand-up surfing corporate retail brands actually gave a fuck about bodyboarding and wanted to invest in them instead of shun them, you know, like there's so much to that board.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
I'd have those days all over again, time and time again, man. But dude, speaking about retail companies and speaking about closing general, I wanted to touch on Axiom, man. You know, like, wearing your threads so long ago.
I'd love to
know if they were still out there available for purchase, man, because you get some great designs and the clothes were sick, man. Where is Axiom at the moment?
Axiom is in a kind of like a redevelopment phase, I guess. I do have some clothes. You just have to message me and I can send you pictures. They're mainly just one-offs and like having an online shop. I can't keep up with that at the moment because I'm just really busy and I don't want to leave people hanging if they've ordered something. So I've, you know, having the online shop is not an option right now. I mean, unless there's someone out there that wants to get involved and do that with me. But that's a whole nother adventure, because there has been a few people that have been, you know, amazing people in my life and have wanted to help out, and all the best intentions just haven't, it hasn't really worked out. So that actually put a bit of a halt on its progression. But, you know, actually in some ways that, you know, with COVID and stuff, there was a couple moments where I was about to do something, you know, take a big risk, a business risk, and then COVID happened, which would have just thrown it back in my face. So I'm kind of lucky I have been modest with the whole fashion production side of things for the brand. I do struggle with the fast fashion and having my own level of ethics. I do struggle with that. It almost doesn't, it's almost like Axiom as a, its ethos needs, it doesn't really represent that well in a fast fashion sense. So I've been making these clothes that are really, you know, quality, organic, and this is good for your body and gonna last. And I've been I've hand printed them myself, so the prints are gonna last longer. Some of the dyes are, you know, are better for nature, less chemical runoff, just for my own I guess karma. And yeah, that's feeling pretty good. And I've got some new designs and just working that out, but it's kind of transforming into more of a creative collective where I've got a few people that want to, you know, we're like a multimedia creative collective, and I'm as a graphic designer now, and you know, I a song composer. This combination kind of throws Axiom into this multifaceted creative world where I could probably start to use Axiom as the kind of branding of this multifaceted creative endeavor of mine. So that's kind of what, you know, what I might do with it. And then obviously there'll be some clothes on the side, maybe work with some other artists and get some fresh art, fresh vision out there and see what happens. But yeah, there was a time where it was kind of like I was selling a lot of clothes and it was definitely a business, and then I'm happy that I'm not necessarily doing that business anymore because it took up a lot of my time. And you know, it was one chapter, one big learning curve, and it was cool to be doing business. And I really appreciate that you liked the clothes that I got you.
Oh, bruh. I've actually still got two of them now, man.
Have you? All right.
You know, with me, you know how, like, clothes come and go and you leave in place or whatever. These ones have stuck with me just because probably good vibes and fate, really, man. But it's one of those, the long black sleeve T-shirt with the beautiful growing tree on the back.
Oh, yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, love that one. And then yeah, I think the photos I sent you the other day when we were at Stanley with Dame Woods, I was wearing one of them. And then your button-up blue collared shirt with a
roll. Oh, nice. The linen one.
Fuck yeah, bro. And I've actually worn that to a couple of events and, you know, made myself feel pretty good about it because I love those threads. And yeah, if you're going to make some more, definitely let me know because I'll be one of the first people to put my hand up for a purchase. And the designs are really cool. Like, you're right, the art and the graphic design that goes into them is so different, and that's the great point of difference that you want when you want to wear clothes. It's an expression, not just, you know, buying the fucking mass-produced general pants shit that just comes out every year. It's like you want to give back to artists and put things back into good local businesses instead of just the mega conglomerate that is fast fashion, as you mentioned.
Yeah, there's a kind of a pretty, you know, like they're just pumping out clothes that are only gonna last 1 year and then you're gonna have to buy again, which is, you know, that is what it is. And it's nice to the retail, you know, expression and keeping up with trends and buying new stuff. I'm not, you know, there's nothing really wrong with that. But if everyone's doing it, it can become a bit of a mess. So I kind of withdrew a little bit there. But I'm so happy to, you know, there are some designs, like you said, like with that peace tree design and that one, Loose Business. I called that linen shirt, Loose Business.
So well named.
Yeah, it was really flowy blue linen. Some of these things are special to me, and I'm glad I made them and could share them. And I do actually hear the same story. This people wear them till they turn into rubble, basically. Or they've still got them, which is even better.
Dude, it's showing that they're lasting the test of time. So like you said, with fast fashion, it's the business model to turn it over every year, and you want to buy and keep capitalism kind of marching forward. But with your stuff, that, yeah, it's well over 10 years ago now, I've still got them. It's kind of just is there and there. It shows that they stand the test of time.
Yeah, that's good. That's good news. And the new stuff that I've been doing is also that same level of quality, but all Australian made, so it ends up becoming quite expensive. I can't really just go and fork out to make heaps of them, but I think I'll work something out maybe on order. So feel free to reach out if there's some old designs that you want me to redo, because we can work something out.
Where would be the best place to contact you for that stuff, Josh?
I guess like you could probably, I mean, sometimes I'm good with Instagram, sometimes I'm not, but everyone's welcome to reach me on joshuaellardgarner@gmail.com with stuff, and I check my emails. So if you do want to reach out about absolutely anything, there you go. There's my email.
Giddy up, bro. Giddy up. Well, dude, yeah. I would love to talk for another hour and a half, but I've got to afford to go back to work and put food on the table for this hungry, hungry family here in Sydney.
Bro.
Dude, I've had such a good time yarning with you, bro. Like, we need to do this again, and we need to catch up when you're back over east or when we're back over west, and yeah, continue on the good vibes and just continue on this good life journey that, you know, yourself and myself and all cool boogs around there and just people in general are on. It's conversation is powerful, and I really feel like I've got a lot out of today, and I hope you have too, man. And I just want to thank you for coming on the lounge.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. Super stoked to be just chatting with you, and then also like, wow, yeah, chatting to everyone who will be listening. So hello to you, and absolutely love bodyboarding, and just so happy that we have this bodyboarding community. You know, we just got to keep supporting each other and keep having fun, and the rest will unfold. And you know, who knows what's coming for bodyboarding, but I think it's good stuff, and I'm just happy that I'm still doing it, and happy to chat about what we just chatted about. I mean, it's cool to reflect. I hope you enjoyed.
Oh man, I did. Well said, brother, and I'll catch you in the ocean very soon.
Cool, bros. See you soon.
You.
Yeah, cheers. Bye. It was all a pipe dream, watching bodyboarding up on TV.